Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Sassy Witch by Danielle Garrett, narrated by Amanda Ronconi. Chapter 1.
Have you seen the weather forecast?
The question wasn't spoken in the typical small talk manner. Rather, it sounded like a screaming missile as Cassie burst through the double doors into the Lilac House banquet room. My heart jumped into my throat at the sudden and ear-piercing interruption. Bad wings, Cass, you scared me. What's wrong?
Snow! It's calling for snow.
Cassie waved her cell phone at me.
I've lived in Beechwood Harbor my entire life, and I can count the times it's snowed on one hand. It never snows here. And this year, not only did we get that freak snowstorm before Christmas, now this, the week before Valentine's Day. What is going on?
I suppressed a smile. While I wasn't a meteorologist, I did happen to know what, or rather who, was behind the unexpected white Christmas. Jack Frost had gotten a little carried away while doing his part to make the town festive for Santa Claus's visit. Yes, really. But short of calling in a favor to Jack, I wasn't sure there was much I could do about the impending flurry. Sadly, Santa hadn't left behind a business card for the ice enthusiast before leaving town back to the North Pole.
This is going to be a disaster,
Cassie moaned, slumping into the nearest folding chair.
We should just cancel the whole thing. Maybe we can still get part of our deposit back on the food and flowers. Do you think Scarlett's already ordered the flowers?
Okay, damage control time. Cass, I said gently. A little snow isn't going to kill the event. Most of the attendees live within 30 miles, and I'm sure the county will send plows out to clear the streets. We can talk to Tad over at the hardware store and see if he can loan us some snow blowers. Adam and Nick can help shovel, and I'm sure some of the others on the planning committee can pitch in too. You can throw in free coffees and pastries to sweeten the pot. I'll call the local hotels and see if shuttle services are available in case it gets really bad. We do not have to cancel. Cassie peered up at me. The lines scrunched across her forehead made her look like a sad puppy dog. I smiled. Cassie, I promise it's going to be great, she exhaled.
Are you sure?
Promise, I replied, offering her my pinky. I'll call Jack Frost myself if that's what it takes. I won't let this event fall apart.
Okay.
She laughed and hooked her pinky with mine.
While you're at it, give the Easter Bunny a jingle and remind him I like the dark chocolate caramels.
I nodded. Dark chocolate caramels. Got it. Cassie sighed heavily as she pushed to her feet.
This whole singles weekend is turning me into a basket case. When I first volunteered to head up the planning committee, I had no idea how stressful it would be.
Well, it would help if Hannah Stoll would stop breathing down your neck, I replied, crossing the room to continue putting tablecloths on the last two folding tables. She's just bitter that she's laid up with that ACL tear and can't be here to bark at everyone in person.
She's called me 3 times already this morning, Cassie said, coming to help me.
Our small town of Beechwood Harbor was a known tourist spot in the summer months. The Washington coastline was beautiful year-round, but the tourists tended only to come out when the weather turned. The city council had recently been pushing for ideas to bring in more tourists during the other 9 months of the year. After much deliberation, it was decided that the town would hold a singles week leading up to Valentine's Day weekend. One of the ladies on the council had read about an event in Ireland that drew in thousands of people for a month-long singles event. No one in town had the energy for an event on that scale, so we'd decided to host an event starting Tuesday and going clear through Saturday evening, with a send-off breakfast Sunday morning. Valentine's Day itself fell on a Friday, which gave us plenty of time to match people up in time for the holiday. Somehow, poor Cassie managed to get roped into planning and organizing the entire thing. As soon as she realized how big of a bite she'd chomped off, she put up the BFF bat signal, and I came swooping into her rescue. As soon as Christmas was over, we found ourselves up to our armpits in spreadsheets, candy hearts, and papier-mâché cupids. I didn't mind helping her, but the event had kind of taken on a life of its own, and I was ready for it to finally be here, mostly so it could end.
I still don't know what possessed me to take this on, Cassie said, running her finger along the tablecloth to smooth away a crease in the pale pink fabric. I smiled and kept my opinion to myself. From my vantage point, Cassie had been manipulated into taking on the role. Hannah Stoll usually headed up events like this, but she'd suffered an ACL tear on a ski vacation with her family, and her husband begged her to take a step back and focus on her recovery. With her out of the way, some of the older ladies on the council pounced on Cassie like a pack of lionesses going after Bambi. Cassie was married to the town's police chief, and the ladies on the council were eager to groom Cassie into the town's head event planner, thus cementing Chief Lincoln and her as Beechwood's primary power couple. Word on the street, according to my favorite gossipy ghost, Gwen, was that Chief would eventually be asked to run for mayor, and Cassie gaining experience running big town-wide events was only a sample of what was to come. Valentine's Day weekend was her first test, and I wasn't going to let her fail, even if it took a little magic. "It's going to be fine, Cassie," I told her, as I secured the last tablecloth. That done, I started dumping packages of candy hearts into crystal bowls that would serve as our centerpieces, alongside some understated floral arrangements for the welcome brunch. "We've got everything under control. Well, besides the weather, but we have workarounds there, too. You'll see. It's going to be great." The event was being held at the Lilac House, a stately inn that had once been a historic mansion. A few years back, a home renovation show had come to town and renovated the property into a charming inn. It had a large event space that would be our home base throughout the week. We had a myriad of events planned, each night with its own activity. We'd arranged a bachelorette auction, where some of the town's most eligible singles were being auctioned off for charity. There would be a few different singles mixers, a romantic Italian dinner on Valentine's Day itself, and then a big masquerade gala on the final evening. It had been a ton of work over the last 8 weeks, but we were in the home stretch now. All we had to do was keep calm and... "Oh, no!" Cassie yelped. I jolted, sending half a pack of candy hearts skittering across the table. "What now?" I asked, biting back the snarl from my voice as I gathered the wayward hearts. "Oops, sorry," Cassie said, scrambling to help clean up the chalky candies. "I just got a message from Kira. The champagne order got dropped off at Siren Song instead of here." I blinked. "And?" "I don't have room for all that at the shop," Cassie huffed. She stuffed her phone back into the pocket of her jacket and headed for the door. "I have to go pick it up and bring it here. Maybe Tad will let me borrow a dolly. If not, I can..." "Cass," I interrupted. She turned, one hand on the doorknob. "Breathe," I reminded her, holding my hands out, thumb and index fingers forming small circles. I closed my eyes. "Inhale, exhale, repeat." When I opened my eyes, she was gone. "Bat wings," I muttered. I'd never seen Cassie so spun up before. The event was a big deal, but even still, there had to be something else bugging her. Were she and her newly minted mister having problems? Was there such a thing as the 7-month itch? I shook my head, dismissing the theory, and went back to work. With Cassie out of my way, I was free to let my magic off its leash. A few swishes of my hands sent fairy lights and strands of white tulle flying toward the ceiling. The decorations affixed themselves to the hooks in the ceiling tiles. No stepladder required. Another flurry of swipes and the chairs moved into their places around the tables. Candles organized themselves around the bowls of candies, placemats plopped onto tables, and gold charger plates flew through the air like shiny UFOs. The caterers would bring the flatware, glasses, and dishes, so I didn't have to worry about that. The event space already had a lovely chandelier in the center of the room, and with the newly added twinkle lights, the room had a soft, romantic glow in every corner. The linens were soft, understated pink, and I'd talked Cassie out of putting up the fat cherub statue she'd found at a local antique shop. Well, okay, I'd broken one of them accidentally and convinced her that without its mate, the statue would look out of place. A bar sat in one corner, ready to be decorated with a swag of fresh greenery and flowers Scarlett Sanderson would bring by the following morning before the welcome brunch.
A few vases also sat empty, ready for her arrangements. I'd ordered roses, lilies, and hydrangea. No carnations or baby's breath were to be allowed in the door. Some rose petals would go on the tables, completing the centerpieces without adding tall obstacles to deter conversation. It was going to be perfect. I smiled to myself and flicked off the lights. I'd left my purse and coat with Justine, the sweet brunette at the front desk. As she handed me my things, I made sure she was going to come to at least one of the night's events. Gwen had informed me that Justine had recently gone through a nasty breakup. I'd promised Gwen I would do my best to wrangle the 20-something to the singles event. "See you tomorrow morning," I said, twinkling my fingers at the woman before swinging open the Lilac House's front door and stepping out into the street. Brr! I shuddered against the cold and tucked my chin into the collar of my quilted coat. A gift from Santa Claus himself. It certainly felt cold enough to snow. I peered up into the night sky and pleaded silently with Jack Frost, on the off chance that was how the system worked, for a break. Plea offered, I hurried up the hill towards home. A strange car was parked in the driveway, right behind my roommate Evangeline's sporty little convertible. Did we have visitors? I couldn't remember anyone mentioning company, but maybe I'd missed something. Between running my potions business in the Seattle Haven and helping Cassie with the singles event, something might have slipped through the cracks of my memory. I opened the door, and my familiar, a chubby tabby cat named Boots, came bounding down the hallway from my bedroom. He crashed his head into my shins and then wrapped himself around my ankle. I laughed and removed my gloves before stooping over to pet him. "Hey, Bootsy, what's wrong? Did Adam forget to feed you dinner?" I straightened and let out a surprised cough at finding a strange man, dressed in a navy blue suit, standing 3 feet away, a clipboard in his hands. Hello? The man, a wiry fellow with salt-and-pepper hair and round spectacles, glanced down at his paperwork and then back up at me.
"Miss Bolt, I presume?"
Yes, I'm Holly. Who are you?" I glanced around the informal living room, looking for any sign of my roommates. Boots rammed his shoulder into the other ankle.
"Pierre Ancel,"
the man said, with a hint of a French accent. He didn't bother to offer me a handshake.
"I am here on behalf of the Supernatural Protection Agency to inspect the home and form a proposal for the needed renovations."
Renovations? No, that can't be right. Posey doesn't want any renovations done. I took a few steps toward him. "Where is she? Does she know you're here?"
"Posey has already granted the home to the SPA. The agency has agreed to not demolish the home or to sell it without her permission, but renovations must be made in order to get the home up to date and ready for guests."
"Guests?" I nearly choked on the word. "What guests? We're not guests here, we're tenants. We all pay rent to Posey and now to you, or someone like you, I guess. But we're..."
"Miss Bolt,"
Pierre interrupted with a sharp tone.
"As I've explained to your housemates, there will be a meeting this evening at 6:30 to discuss the SPA's plans for the property. Kindly hold your questions until then. I have work to do."
He turned away without waiting for my reply and began scribbling with a pen as he walked into the formal dining room. I looked down at Boots, my mouth hanging open. He offered a slow blink, as if to say he couldn't believe the nerve of the guy either. With a swish of his tail, he changed course toward the kitchen. "All right, priorities," I muttered, following after him. I expected the cat to go to the cupboard where I kept his canned food, but instead he leapt up onto one of the chairs gathered around the farmhouse-style table, joining Adam, Evangeline, and Harmony.
"Hey, Holly," Evangeline said.
Adam got up from the table and came to wrap me in a warm embrace.
"Hey, gorgeous. How was the day?"
"Busy," I said on an exhale. "I don't think I've sat down all day." He kissed me.
"Sounds like you need a foot massage."
"Ah, we get it, we get it. You two are adorable," Harmony groaned. "Take some pity on those of us who aren't as deliriously happy and in love." Adam chuckled and gave me one more quick kiss before returning to his seat at the table.
"Good news, Harmony. They're shipping in a bunch of single dudes this weekend. You can find your very own foot masseur."
"Doubtful," she replied.
her tone crabby. I thumbed over my shoulder at the closed swinging door that partitioned the living spaces off from the kitchen and informal eating area. Anyone know what's going on out there? Some French dude just told me they're planning on renovating the manor. Has anyone told Posey? Adam snorted.
I don't think any of us want to spark off a hurricane in the living room.
He told me that Posey doesn't get any say over whether or not the SPA renovates the house. How can that be possible? When Posey told us she was selling the house, she made it sound like the SPA had agreed to keep it as is. Evangeline frowned into her mug of tea.
It sounds like there were some negotiations. Maybe she had to give a little.
I sighed. Well, great. On top of everything else, we have strangers prowling around our house. And what about this meeting we're supposed to be having tonight? Adam glanced up at the large clock hanging above the door.
Yeah, he told us, too, about 10 minutes ago when he first got here.
How considerate. I sagged into a chair across from Adam. Boots sat on his left, and I smiled at the way his little orange ears peeked over the edge of the table as he tried to be a part of the conversation.
I don't know why you two are worried about it, Harmony said. You'll get married and bust out of here long before the contractor takes down the first wall.
Adam and I exchanged a look across the table. We'd been engaged for a few months now, but besides a shiny new ring on my finger, nothing else had changed. We hadn't thrown an engagement party or even started discussing wedding plans. Adam was busy with his work, and I had a new business that took up most of my energy. I hadn't so much as bought a wedding magazine. The three on my nightstand had been forced on me by Cassie, and their spines weren't yet creased. What's up with you today? I asked Harmony. You're grouchy. Why? She tossed her barely shoulder-length hair as she exhaled. It was currently dyed brown with electric blue streaks.
I got dumped.
I blinked. I didn't even know you were dating someone. How was that possible? Harmony was more than my roommate and friend. She was also my apprentice. We worked together, lived together, and spent most of our social hours either together or in close proximity. If she'd been dating someone, it wouldn't have escaped my notice.
You've been busy with the Valentine's stuff, she replied, her tone still sour.
I frowned. I'm sorry, Harmony, I didn't realize. The young witch shrugged.
It's fine. The guy was a sleaze anyway.
Evangeline patted Harmony's shoulder. We all knew that Harmony's radar was set to bad boy, but so far, none of us had figured out how to move its needle. Evangeline looked up at me, her expression worried. I gave an understanding nod. We'd find someone nice for Harmony, even if it meant sweet-talking the poor guy into wearing a studded leather belt and getting at least one thing on his body pierced. The kitchen door pushed open, and Pierre stood in the doorway.
I've just received a call back to the agency. Would you like to reschedule the meeting, or do you have a few minutes now to discuss the new arrangements?
I shot to my feet. We're ready now.
Very well.
Pierre sniffed and then left the kitchen, apparently giving a silent invitation to join him in the other room. Adam, Evangeline, and Harmony scrambled out of the kitchen. I held the door for Boots, and then followed. We smashed together on the couch, Boots at my feet, and Pierre stood at the mantel, still hugging his clipboard.
This is all of you?
I glanced down the line, then nodded. Besides Posey? Pierre waved a hand, dismissing our ghost landlady, or former landlady, altogether.
Good. As I mentioned, I have business back at headquarters, so I'll make this short. The SPA is converting the Beechwood Manor into an inn for supernatural guests. It seems this town has become something of a hotspot, and the agency would like to have a dedicated place for supernaturals to stay when they are in town. We will be converting the attic into a live-work chamber for the SPA-appointed caretaker, and all of the bedrooms will be converted into guest suites. Where we're standing now will be renovated to include a check-in desk and a coffee cart.
Pierre smiled at this, clearly proud of the idea.
Wait a second,
Adam interjected, holding up one hand.
Did you say all of the rooms?
Pierre inclined his pointed chin.
That's correct.
He released the clip of the clipboard and gathered a handful of pages. With quick, efficient fingers, he handed a sheet to each of us before stepping back.
As part of the arrangements with your former landlady, you've each been granted a generous stipend to assist your moving expenses. You have 90 days to vacate your rented rooms.
My jaw dropped open, but my throat was suddenly bogged down with cotton balls. I couldn't even sputter out a string of words, let alone form a complete sentence. Pierre, likely sensing an uproar, quickly jumped to attention and flashed a smile.
Should any questions arise in the coming days, you may direct them to your contact at the agency. Her name and phone number are printed at the bottom of your paperwork. Thank you, and good evening.
He zipped to the front door and jetted out of the manor as fast as his fancy loafers could carry him. Chapter 2. 90 days? It was the third time I'd repeated it over the span of 5 minutes, and yet it still made no sense, as if the words themselves were from a foreign language. I looked at Adam. 90 days? With a snarl, he crumpled the paper in his hands and pitched the ball into the fireplace.
Jackals, all of them.
I just can't imagine Posey agreed to this, Evangeline exclaimed, still staring dumbstruck at her own sheet of paper.
No wonder she's been MIA today, Adam grumbled. She probably knew the bomb was dropping and decided to make herself scarce.
Adam had lived in the Beechwood Manor for 5 years. He was the longest-term resident and had every right to feel betrayed. We all did, as far as I was concerned. Last year, Posey had disappeared for over a month, only to return with the ground-shattering news that she and her husband Earl had decided to sell the manor to the SPA. She'd only recently been reunited with her husband's ghost, after a century haunting their former home without him. The pair finally felt ready to leave behind the small town they'd founded, and part of that meant giving up their ties to the historic mansion they'd had custom-built for their family while they'd been alive. In the wake of her announcement, it had been hard enough to imagine living at the Beechwood Manor without Posey. Leaving entirely was almost unthinkable. Sure, Adam and I had talked about moving out before, but every time the conversation was raised, we backed off and decided that nowhere else would truly feel like home. Now, the choice was out of our hands, and it stung. Harmony was the first of us to recover. She stood up, calmly folded the paper, and tucked it into the back pocket of her ripped-up black jeans.
Well, guess that's that.
I stared at her. That's all you have to say about it? She shrugged.
There's nothing else to say. They've made up their minds and we're getting the boot. I've been thinking about looking for a place in the Seattle Haven anyway. It would be easier to get to work, and there would be more stuff to do. It's not like Beechwood has a lot going on. Not to mention what a pain it is to try and remember not to use magic out in public. I'm used to living in a haven where it doesn't matter. Here it's like skulking around, keeping secrets all the time. Don't you guys ever get sick of living like you're in the witness protection program or something?
I eyed my apprentice warily. She'd never complained about not using magic in public before. Where was all of this coming from? I cleared my throat, ridding it of the ball of emotion that had settled. Beechwood Harbor is our home, Harmony, I said gently. For us, it's not as simple as just packing a bag and finding a new apartment in the Seattle Haven. Harmony shrugged.
I'm just saying, life would be easier if you didn't always have to worry about someone accidentally finding out the truth about us.
She strode toward the front door. Grabbing a denim jacket off the pegs by the doors, she waved to us.
I'm going out. See you guys later.
That was weird, wasn't it?
Adam asked when she'd gone.
A little, Evangeline replied, looking to me. Is she not happy here? With us?
I shook my head. No clue. She seemed fine yesterday at work. I took today off to help Cassie with the singles event, but I gave her a week's notice, and she didn't seem upset about holding down things at the shop all alone.
I'll go talk to her,
Evangeline said, as she got to her feet. She looked dressed for a night out, but then that was Evangeline. The former actress seemed camera-ready even when wearing her pajamas. Tonight, she wore a sweater dress over a pair of plum leggings. Gold hoop earrings jangled in her hair, standing out against her glossy raven locks. She'd recently cut her hair. It used to fall to the tops of her thighs, but now stopped midway down her back. She still wore it in braids or long, loose waves. And tonight, two jeweled combs held large sections away from her face. My own dark jeans and flannel shirt seemed woefully at odds. But I'd learned to live with the feeling over the years we'd been roomies. I'd go broke or insane, likely both, if I tried to keep up with the ex-starlet. Evangeline hurried out the front door, chasing after Harmony. And I turned to Adam. His face was pinched as he watched the last of the eviction notice reduced to ashes in the fireplace. The room was starting to cool down, and I got up to add a log to the dwindling flames. Rubbing my hands over my upper arms, I turned back around to face him. "You okay?" He nodded, but didn't meet my eyes. I frowned. "Adam?"
"I'm just surprised, that's all. I didn't think Posey would end things on this kind of note."
My heart twisted. "I didn't either." Slowly, he braced his hands on his thighs and pushed up to his feet.
"It was a long day already, and now this."
I offered a small smile. "McNally's?" Adam chuckled, but his own smile didn't fully warm his dark brown eyes.
"I could use something stronger to drink than a Coke."
"Agreed. I'll go grab my..." Boots jumped onto the coffee table before I could finish my sentence, and I laughed at the stern look on his fuzzy orange face. "Don't worry, Bootsy, I didn't forget. I'll get him some dinner and then I'm going to change into some comfy shoes. I made the mistake of wearing these boots all day, and let me tell you, they were not made for walking." Adam snorted.
"Go change, I'll handle Mr. Picky. What's he doing these days, the blue or green cans?"
"Blue," I replied, already heading past the staircase to the hallway that led to my room. We exited the house a few minutes later, the fire extinguished and the cat fed. Adam took my hand and we started down the hill, back into the center of town. Beechwood Harbor was small enough that we walked everywhere. Evangeline was the only one of us with a car. Adam, Harmony, and I commuted to the Seattle Haven through a magical portal in the root cellar of a nearby bungalow, whereas Evangeline walked to the day spa she owned and operated in the middle of town. The car was good for emergencies, of which we'd had a few over the years, but it certainly wasn't necessary in the small town. McNally's was the town's main watering hole, but they also served a full menu for lunch and dinner. It was Adam's favorite eatery, and we wound up there most weeknights, especially now that we'd both been working 60-plus hour weeks.
"So how are things going with the singles week?"
he asked, when we were a few yards away from the manor. "Well, if you ask Cassie, the sky is falling," I replied with a grin. "But I'm feeling pretty optimistic about it." Adam chuckled.
"What's Cassie worried about?"
I gestured up at the sky. "Snow. She thinks if we get a bunch of snow, no one will show up and the whole thing will be ruined."
"Aha," he smiled. "I'll bet it takes more than a little snow to keep away all the frisky singles."
I laughed. "That's what I told her. I mean, where else are people supposed to meet around here? It's not like there are a lot of nightclubs or singles bars between here and Pine Shoals."
"Not all of us can be so lucky as to have their dream girl walk through the front door of their house with a suitcase,"
Adam teased, giving me a sly wink. I laughed. "Very smooth, St. James." He gave a self-satisfied smile and adjusted his collar.
"Thanks.
Although, based on your former reputation, it seems you did pretty well in the dating department long before I moved into the manor. You were the rakish shifter with an eye for the ladies before I had my way with you." Adam laughed.
"Rakish, huh?"
"I didn't call you Casanova for no reason," I reminded him, delivering a playful poke to his ribs.
"Oh, I remember. Then there was that fun period of time when you thought I was going to dump you so I could ask Evie out."
I winced.
"Ugh."
He chuckled and drew me closer to his side.
"You were pretty mean to her. It's kind of a wonder you two are friends now."
I laughed softly. "Luckily, she's a far better person than I am."
"You going to ask her to be a bridesmaid?"
Adam asked. "Only if she agrees to wear the world's ugliest bridesmaid's dress. I'm talking puke green with shiny taffeta ribbons and a truckload of tulle and sequins. It's the only way I'll compete for attention." Adam rolled his eyes and I giggled. "What about you? Who are you going to ask to be your groomsman?" He hitched one shoulder,
I hadn't really thought about it much yet.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?